Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I think it's again an opportunity for us to come and present what it is that we do, as of course under the guidance and leadership of both the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Portfolio Committee. We are going to be talking to the International Convention on the Prevention of Pollution from Ships. Last time when we presented to the Portfolio Committee, I made an indication of the amount of ships that traverse our waters, close to about 13,000 a day that are in our territorial waters. And then this MARPOL Convention becomes a key convention for us to manage that. But of course, it's an exercise that we do not all by ourselves, but also some instances you then have Department of Environment Affairs and certain agencies involved. So, Chairperson, what I will do, let me first introduce the team. I have Sipho Dibakwane, the manager in my office. I then have to my immediate right the chief director responsible for this, Mem Pakiseng Ramayema. Next to Mem Pakiseng Ramayema is a lawyer, somebody who works with these matters on a daily basis from some Sipho Mbatha. Then next to Sipho Mbatha, we have our parliamentary liaison officer, a former member of this house, the Ambassador Tshomo Kgaso. And Fezi, we just came in, I'm sure he just left. But that's the delegation we have today. We have two ladies that are coming in that are going to be joining us. One is Mpho Munyane, I just don't know the other one.
Muloko
Machaka. So they are going to be joining us. They are the people that are working with the Chief Director on these matters. So, Chair, I don't know if I can continue now that I've... Thank you so much, Chair. What I will then do is mine is just to introduce these matters. As I said, Sipho and I are just... Sipho Mbatha this time, not Sipho Dibakwane. Sipho and I are just coming from Durban. We had a session on Operation Pakisa. One of the key issues that we discussed under Operation Pakisa is exactly this thing. And also one of the... I think what we'll do is after the conclusion of the Operation Pakisa, we may have to come back to brief the committee, because there are certain linkages and certain institutional arrangements that are being proposed coming out of the exercise in saying how do we radically begin to transform, but how do we also use our ocean space to transform. And MARPOL, in the context of pollution prevention, management of the oceans becomes key. We will listen to the minister. Chairperson, these are the issues that we will talk to. One is just to give a sense of a background on MARPOL, the convention itself, give you an overview of what the convention is, but talk specifically to Annex 4 and then Annex 6 of what the Annex and the requirements by South Africa of what we would want or ought to do and what is it that we are putting in front of the portfolio committee for them to support us to table these things before Parliament for accession. And then the obligations that are coming out of the two annexes and how do we then create the necessary linkages between the existing legislative framework and how we then incorporate that those two annexes in the current legislative framework. And that was the consultations we've done. I'm sure members understand that both the state law advisors in the International Relations Department as well as in Justice have to concur with both the constitutional alignment of the two annexes, but also they also must be consistent as well with international law. You know, and those are the key stakeholders in the consultative process that we've run. And of course, we'll then say what the other implications are. But key is, of course, the recommendation. We're just making two recommendations to the committee. I'll ask Mem Patterson, the chief director responsible for the exercise, to take us through. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. Thank you, DG. DG has already indicated that we are coming to talk about the Marine Pollution Convention of 1973-78, which is the main convention. And in the background and the introduction of this topic, we're saying MARPOL 73-78 was adopted under the auspices of the International Maritime Organization, which is an IMO. And its stated objective is to preserve the marine environment through the a complete elimination of pollution by oil and other harmful substances and the minimization of accidental discharge of such substances. South Africa acceded to MARPOL in 1984 and is a party to all other annexes of MARPOL. You'll see as we go along that there are about six annexes to MARPOL, except Annex 4 and 6, which if we accede to these two, we shall have completed the circle. The convention is divided into six annexures, whereby Annexure A regulates the prevention of pollution by oil. Annex 2 controls pollution by noxious liquid substances in bulk. Annex 3, the prevention of pollution by harmful substances carried in package form. Annex 4, which is what we will be talking about and will be presenting, it regulates the prevention of pollution by sewage from the ships. Annex 5 regulates the control of pollution by garbage from ships. Annex 6, which is another annex that we'll be requesting to accede to, regulates the prevention of air pollution from ships.
The other ones are just telling me that they are late.
Chair, I don't know. They're not. My DG will apologize on behalf of our delegation here. leaving Pretoria in the morning.
And I've forgotten the other name.
Mpopo.
Yeah, they will be coming. So that's why I apologize. I know that they will be coming. Let's continue.
Now getting to the actual annexure, which is the discharge of sewage from ships. What do we mean by sewage? We tried to define that to say that it means drainage and other washing and other waste from any other form of toilets and urinals. Drainage from medical premises via wash basins, wash tubs, and scoopers located in such premises. Drainage from spaces containing living animals or other waste waters. That's sewage, the way it's defined internationally. Therefore, Annex 4 deals with the discharge of the sewage into the sea. The ship's equipment and systems for the control of sewage discharge, the provision of facilities at ports, terminals for the reception of sewage and requirements for survey and certification. This convention goes beyond just saying you will not discharge. It goes further to say what kind of equipment should be installed to the vessels to manage this, the discharge of this of sewage from the ships, as well as to force member countries to provide facilities at port terminals where this can be disposed of. And it also goes further to require the surveys and the certificates to be given to the ships that meet the requirements. It is estimated that large ships that carry 500,000 passengers can discharge about 100,000 liters of sewage per day. And clearly, if we don't manage this kind of danger in our waters, it has very, very severe and very, very drastic implications to the environment as well as to the waters. The environmental problems associated with sewage from ships include the introduction of nutrients causing algal blooms and reduced oxygen levels, which can pose a serious health risk to people who come into contact with polluted water during recreational activities as well as other commercial activities, if you can come across. Because I don't think I need to expand more about the dangers of waste and the kind of reactions that it has when it meets or when it gets into contact with some other chemicals in the water. Now coming to Annex 4, which is the prevention of pollution by air from ships. Annex 6, which is now, this is for pollution by air. I don't know, Chair, if maybe I can pause here to try and say that about the sewage, we have discussed it. Mm-hmm. Now we are getting to another annex, Chair, because IMO has broken this annexes into different clusters. Now coming to the air pollution after doing the sewerage, which is just about the disposal of sewerage, the equipment that is used, the implication of sewerage to the sea, and all the requirements that a state like South Africa, a port state, need to provide in terms of what the ports should look like, the kind of facilities that should be allowed. Now we are moving to this Annex 6, which is now about the pollution that comes of air. I am sure that the honourable members are aware that this is not just in relation to the ships, that there is high concern about the sulfur oxide, the nitrogen oxide that come from the fuels that we use. So this one now is specifically about the same oxides that come from the diesel that is used by the ships. That is the emissions, how they are controlled and how they are measured. There are some scientific measures in terms of what kind of oil should be used and how to manage excess emissions from the sewer. It also prohibits deliberate emissions of ozone depleting substances. The annexure further allows for an emission control area to be designated for sulfur oxide and nitrogen oxide and other types of greenhouse emissions from ships. So a country like South Africa would identify a place and say this is where in case we are involved in an activity that produces a lot of this, this is how we will dispose of the excess. In general, Annex 6 applies to all ships of 400 cross tonnage and above and to all fixed and floating drifting rigs and other platforms. I think now that we are already talking about the rigs here, and I think Gigi has referred to what she will be presenting sometime in the future about the potential economic activities that come from the sea, including the exploration, mineral exploration, the oil and the gases that come. Those also have pollution effect that is already covered under this model. Annex 6 consists of a set of requirements for study and issuance of international air pollution certificate and regulations regarding ozone depleting substances and regulating plants and firefighting equipment, nitrogen oxide from diesel, sulfur oxide from diesel engine, volatile organic compound emissions from cargo tankers, shipboard incantations, or incineration. Currently, what is happening in South Africa? Currently in South Africa, the discharge of sewage from commercial vessels is one of the few areas related to shipping where there is currently no enforceable international standard. Marine Pollution Prevention Act is the current legislation that regulates marine pollution. SAMHSA, the Department of Transport Agency, is responsible to enforce the legislation as well as any other regulations that will be developed when we talk about implementing this convention if it goes through. The obligations as per the convention. A flag state, which is the country, is a country where a ship is registered and is responsible for certifying that the ships comply with the MARPOL prevention standards. A coastal state, which is a country like South Africa, as a signatory nation, is responsible for enacting domestic legislation to implement the convention and effectively pledges to comply with the convention and related laws of other nations. The administration, which in this particular case is SAMHSA, should undertake surveys where when conducting port state control to request the certificate of compliance. The government of each party to the convention, which requires ships operating under jurisdiction and visiting ships while in its waters, should comply with the requirements of the regulations of the convention. And South Africa, under this convention, has the responsibility to ensure that its vessels comply, to ensure that the periodic surveys and inspections of vessels are carried out, and to ensure that certificates of compliance to Annex 4 and 6 are issued and are up to date. Consultation that took place to ensure that we consult before we recommend this accession. SAMHSA was consulted, South African Petroleum Industry was consulted, Transnet Ports Authority and the Department of Environmental Affairs. All the stakeholders supported the accession to Annex 4 and Annex 6. The chief state law advisors from the Department of International Cooperation and from the Department of Justice scrutinized the annexures and have confirmed that Annex 4 and 6 are consistent with the domestic and the international law. The other implications that the financial implications, the convention will not have any additional financial implications to the state, because as indicated, the implementation will be conducted by SAMHSA, which already exists. It's just a question of including one or two items in the list of the guidelines when they tick what is correct and what is up to date. Communications implications, the state will deposit the instrument of accession with the Secretary General of IMO after the parliamentary approval. The security implications, there are no security implications as far as we can see this. And the implementation plan is that the survey of ships is the function currently carried out by SAMHSA. Transnet Port Authority is also responsible to ensure adequate reception facilities and to carry out periodic surveys as well of the port facilities. Coming to the parliamentary procedure, the convention will be dealt in accordance with the provisions of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution, and therefore parliamentary approval will be sought thereto. That section is the section that deals with agreements, international agreements that have certain obligations on the state. Therefore, it is recommended that the Portfolio Committee on Transport notes South Africa's intention to accede to MARPOL Annex 4 and Annex 6. And this honorable committee approves the submission of this annexes for tabling in Parliament. With that, I think my colleague from SAMHSA will be able to answer any other questions that are related to the actual surveys. DG and Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you very much, DG.
Thanks, Chair. What I will do, because I want to come in and talk a lot, particularly around the air pollution issue and the work that we're doing under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, because the responses that we as a department, as a sector department, are beginning to do. So that's going to be important, so that we also fully contextualize the linkages between MARPOL, the role we play in the United Nations Framework on Climate Change, Convention on Climate Change, the international engagements that have been happening. But I'll ask you, Sipho, to get into the specificity of some of the issues that have been raised, because the Chief Director has brushed on issues. Some of the members may be left none wiser than before, but I think, Sipho, just to get into some of the key issues of the convention. I'll ask you to do that before I come in, if I may, Chetan.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson, and morning to all. Basically, I'll be broad, maybe, unless there's questions that need to be clarified. But basically, I would say that there was a time where South Africa was excluded to participate at international level. But in 1995, South Africa was readmitted to participate at UN and its specialized agencies, including the International Maritime Organization. And since then, we've ratified or acceded to a number of conventions. And some of the conventions that were adopted by the IMO require the port state or the coastal state to adopt certain mandatory conventions. And some of those mandatory conventions is MAPO. Annex 1 and Annex 2 was mandatory, of which we acceded to, and including Annex 3 and Annex 5. In terms of our constitution, we were required, because our constitution stipulate that international convention cannot be enforced domestically unless it is translated into national legislation. Therefore, those conventions, that those annexures that were adopted by South Africa were translated into Marine Pollution Prevention of Pollution from Ships Act of 1986. One of the obligations of the coastal state was that we can require a ship to have the facilities on board, but if the port state doesn't have the facilities to receive especially sewage, then it becomes difficult for that ship to comply with. Sorry for that interruption. So we were required in terms of Annex 4, even though we're not a state party to sewage convention, but for the fact that other countries are state parties and they've got sewage on board, but then how can they offload that sewage if the country does not have the facilities? But there was no national legislation that compelled South Africa to have those facilities, but for the fact that we're trading with international international shipping companies, so that's why Transnet has those facilities, but then there's no national legislation that compels them to have those facilities. So one of the objectives of this convention is to request for the accession to MAPOL Annex 4. For Transnet to be able to provide those facilities, and for even for the IMO to be able to come and audit those facilities to ensure that we comply with international obligations. On Annex 6, it talks about ship-sourced pollution, which is in the form of SOx substances that comes from ships. As the DG has stated that we're from Operation Pakisa, and one of the labs, they talk about the exploitation and exploration of offshore oil and gas. So this convention will try to come up with international standards that will need to be adhered to by, for example, oil rigs that are drilling in our shores. So it is one of the measures in trying to prevent and combat pollution from any vessel, including ships. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, Shepard. Just from the pollution aspect, the pollution from ships, I thought probably it's important that we emphasize a couple of things. The first one, is that if indeed we are to exploit the exclusive economic zone in terms of the territorial waters, one of the key things we need to do is really to deal with the issues around pollution, air pollution, either sulfur or nitrogen gases that comes out of ships. And it becomes important that we therefore accede to that so that then you then can domesticate those things. So you are in a position to manage that, I think that. That's the first one. But secondly, in the interactions we are having at the United Nations, UNFCCC platforms, it becomes difficult to engage at that level when you do not have a domesticated legal platform upon which to then put particular portions. Of course, from a NEMA and other acts, we are in a position to respond, but from a transport perspective, it becomes therefore difficult to then make sure that you say, informed by this legislative framework, this is how we move. But we've been able to do that. Because one of the biggest challenges is how we deal with the emissions from greenhouse gases. We know transport is the second biggest emitter behind the energy. How you deal with ships, how you deal with aviation, therefore become important in how you deal with this. South Africa is far from its trading partners, and therefore we've got to come up with means of how we then lessen that burden, as it were, chairperson, in how we then deal with this matter. So I thought probably becomes important that we really look at how these conventions literally have an impact down the line in the ability of us in discharging our functions, both as a country, but particularly as a as a sector. So there are those other issues that may have. But as the chief director said, the two recommendations are would ask for the support of the portfolio committee for the tabling of this in parliament so that then we can accede. But two is therefore would probably going forward people then have the to do the necessary legislative amendments to make sure that this thing then it becomes effective, so that Transnet, as the body that owns and manages the ports on behalf of the Republic, then makes provision for such infrastructure. So that then IMO can come in and then audit all that that we do. So thank you, Chair. That's what I thought the emphasis I should make.
Thank you very much. There we are, colleagues. I will recognize the Honourable Hadjiwazi. Are there any other hands? Honourable Dupreta, Honourable Masala, let's start from here, going down. Honourable Hadjiwazi.
No. Thank you, Chair. I've got just a few questions to understand. But yes, of course, indeed, I guess this was being an outstanding, a long outstanding document to be also be submitted and be supported in ensuring that at least our ports are also safe from ship pollution. There's one aspect that you've highlighted. It's just that your slides are not being numbered. But there's somewhere where you spoke about the issue of the security implication. And you said there's no implication. If you can be able to just clarify or elaborate in terms of what exactly do you mean when you say there's no security implication in terms of the implementation of this plan. The other thing is that I'm trying to check whether this law, what would be the relationship between this law and some of the other laws within the Department of Environment, as they also got that responsibility in terms of overseeing and monitoring the issues of our environment. And we know that the issues of spillage, issues of especially the emissions that are being polluted by these ships also get monitored by the department, high responsibility.
I'm trying to check what would be the relationship in terms of ensuring that at least there's linkages, but also in ensuring that this law, they also communicate with other any other laws that we have in South Africa that speaks to these laws, because we don't intend to find ourselves laws contravention or, you know, are in loggerheads with each other. If you can be able to do that. But last question, Chair. I'm trying also to understand what will be the implication of a ship that is found, or what is the what is the implication of a ship that is going to found, you know, contravening of this particular laws, and what will be the punitive measures that will be thrown in terms of you know, anybody that's going to find contravening this, and do we have enough resources or human resources in monitoring this thing? Because, you know, one thing that also that I found that is a challenge. We put in these laws very nicely, but we find out that ourselves we don't have enough capacity in dealing with this thing. I can hear the lawyer is saying, no, this thing is in order and everything. But is he the only one that is looking at this, or whether it's more staff that, you know, to be able to assist? Because those are the things that we must be able to address in order to ourselves. So that when he said, we support you, let's go this thing and implement it. But let's not give you something that it will be beyond your powers. We must be able to say, okay, we give you this, but to also give you extra responsibility to add more capacity so that you can be able to monitor this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. I think it has also made the whole thing more clearer to us. But now I've got two questions. Yes, one, I need some clarity on the role that is played by Transnet. You said something about that, but I did not catch it up correctly. And also the issue of financial implication. If we say there is none, are we saying we are not even going to need extra manpower to deal with this particular issue, which we are going to start, the two of them? I knew we have not been doing them in the past. And of course, it is important that we accede to this, because this will make our sea space also very safe to everyone who's supposed to use it. But are we really saying totally we are not going to have any financial implication on this one? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. Some of the questions have been covered. I've just got two, and that is, I'm just trying to understand what we did before this, once this ratified. What was in place to protect our areas, our sea areas? So if you could just explain how that fits in, because it sounds like it's come from now onwards. And then you mentioned something about that there's no real legislative framework that compels us to do this kind of thing, so you could unpack that. And then just to expand what was previously asked, and that is the relationship between the Transport Department and Transnet, and how the two link up. And there was one other question I've now forgotten. Sorry, Chair. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sven.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I wanted to thank maybe the department to come and present to us, but I wanted to comment something. You see, Chairperson, please, I wanted you to appeal. Number one is to, may you please, the time of submitting the presentation,
please help us in advance, because it gives us opportunity to go through so that we can be able to empower you in terms of our interaction with you. It was late. Number two, about issue of numbering. Numbering is killing us, because also when we refer, we wanted to be time is against us. Next time it must be rectified. Then I'll start with my questions. Number one, you see, I understand about these conventions and the annexures which you have put in front of us, but I wanted to find out from you, I'm subject for correction if I'm out of order, in terms of pollution. We are having a power station which is a nuclear power station, for example, which is Quebec power station. Quebec is consuming a lot of water from the sea and take it back to the sea. That is number one. And number two, the generators and the engines which they are using as a power station, there are a lot of generators. Do you have any measures against that in terms of compliance? And then also, may you please assist me in terms of mining. Again, it is alleged, I don't say it's true, that there are plants which are inside the sea, I mean, which are right inside the sea, like the plant of, what is it, crude oil and the like. Do you have measures in terms of, because here they are not catered in terms of your annexures. Where are you putting them, under which category? And also, it is alleged that the researchers, they have discovered that under the waters, in particular from our seashores to Namibia, there are diamonds under. I don't know whether they've started to dig and whatnot. Do we have any measures? Because it's not covered here as well. And then come to issue of compliance. You know, in your presentation, I was a little bit concerned when you were saying about the issue of our International Maritime Organization in terms of the under UN Convention. You said, I'm subject for correction, that UN Convention cannot be translated with domestic conventions. Am I right or wrong? Sorry? They must be. Okay. I'm comfortable if you are saying, because my argument then was going to be against the piracy. Since they were having a number of piracy, and how do you, I mean, obviously some of the pirates, they don't even comply. Where do you put them? And then the other one is the issue of monitoring for the compliance in terms of the conventions. Do you have any, Boo, you were right. He spoke about the capacity, but myself, I'm putting the hour another way around. How do you monitor the compliance in terms of these conventions? Do we have any structural which is under your, under your perimeters, which is doing the monitoring in terms of this convention, whether they are adhered to the compliance? The last one, I don't know in which page. I was concerned about the numbering of pages, where pages are imported. You said it is estimated that large ships that carry 500,000 passengers can discharge about 1,000 liters of sewer per day. So therefore, here's my question. Do you have maybe stats that in South Africa, how many ships in this capacity? Because to me, you know, for an example, there was a bottleneck of ships which are staying weeks and weeks before going to the where they're supposed to go. Then what is the status quo then? It means the spilling is abnormal. So do you have stats on that season? How do you monitor that doesn't happen? I'll put it there, maybe I'll come a second round. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gigi.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to Honorable Members. I will, as always, take the easy ones and then leave the to the team. I'll start with what Honorable Khadebe raised, the issue around security implications. There are security implications because one is that any pollution undermines the territorial integrity of the Republic because it's an invasion of the territorial integrity and undermining of that. And therefore, the means through which we would want to monitor this is how we therefore use the satellite imagery to make sure that we do that. Between ourselves and DIA, there is that capacity. Whether it's capacity enough, I can tell you now it's not. It can't be enough. A DIA now, they can tell you, with the same applies with SAMS. As a ship comes by, we already know, we can monitor it as it enters our territorial water, monitor its emissions, monitor its discharge of whatever. And so we can then monitor that. And therefore the issue, therefore, do we have the ability, or does our defense have the ability to respond to all or each and everyone? The answer is an absolute no. There is not, because we just do not have the capacity. But we can tell, and therefore once we know, we therefore can begin putting into process a number of things. And I'm sure Sipo and Patsy will talk to that. The issue around linkages with DIA, yes, they are. As I said, Sipo and I are just coming from Durban Operation Parties. In the lab, Sipo talked about labs. Labs is just like a committee. But in the lab on marine protection, there are three areas. One is marine protection and environment protection. But secondly is therefore the security element and the defense element. And then what's the third one, Sipo? In the one you are in, the other one is governance. How we therefore create the necessary linkages between what we do as transport, what DIA is doing, what the Department of Defense is doing. But we do not talk across. That's what we are doing, because at present the only legislation that manages anything that floats on the sea bed or on shore is the Maritime Zones Act, which is the responsibility of the Minister of Transport. But it gives her the exclusive jurisdiction. But you'd want to bring others in, because there's a lot that indeed that happened. So there is that. In terms of spillage, we're still the only department responsible for managing issues around spillage. We have asked SAMHSA, as the agents of the Department of Transport, to discharge that function on behalf of the department. We have two tags that are monitoring and that respond to such spillages. So there is that. So the linkages with other laws, we're now beginning to align. I'm sure you know the nature of government terms is silo and things, but the issue therefore, because of the ocean space, it requires that there be that collaboration and how they work with each other. So that's what we're doing. In the case the ship contravenes, is that by international convention, we then can engage the flag state. So there are those things. Do we have the capacity to monitor? We have some capacity to monitor, but we do not have the capacity to enforce. That may be, but I will ask the team to add to that. But the issue is that we know, I mean, as I said, we know each and every ship that moves in the harbor. We know that because we have the monitoring capacity. You know, we do have. If you have, for example, we have a Japanese trawler that's outside of our territorial waters, putting in its nets. You know, sometimes it becomes difficult. I mean, the most of sophisticated countries, United Nations, I mean, US, UK, Australia, Norway, And they're still struggling today with those kinds of trawlers that are, you know, fishing there. But we do have the monitoring capacity. That I can confidently say that. We do have the monitoring capacity. The role played by Transnet, I think Sipho talked to it, is that, as I said, there's a Transnet is the custodian of the port infrastructure for the, on behalf of the Republic. The role they need to play is to provide the infrastructure for discharge, manage the discharge, and therefore, so you then do not have unnecessary pollution treated and then release the silt. Financial implications, of course, as you improve and put in instruments, technology, you will experience financial implications. But by and large, there is none that it's in existing technologies that is there, there's infrastructure that is there. There won't be additional financial implications. That's how we've put it. But the implications are in the improvement of the technology that you have in wanting to discharge the function, then there may be, but generally there is none. What is in place to protect our seas? Yes, we do have the defense, the Navy that is there. We do have the what SAMHSA calls LRIT, long range identification and tracking system. The Department of Environmental Affairs has that. So we do have that. So the issue around non-legislative framework, we said we do not have domestic, and I'll leave that to the lawyers to talk to. The DOT Transnet relationship is that, as I said, Honorable Tifreitas, is that Transnet must provide infrastructure for the discharge, and therefore DOT as a regulatory department that provides the necessary frameworks. As Sipho said earlier on, IMO will then come in and audit, and in the audit they want to check if indeed these things are complied with and will provide the infrastructure as an IMO. As a member state. I must apologize, Chairperson, around the submission. I thought this one was just, I'd asked the team that, now, in terms of submission to Parliament, today's paper, all the change is just a cosmetic change, because I think the other one is just top heavy. The submission that was submitted before is exactly the same as this. It's just that it's just the change, because I said to the team they must really try by all means to remove pictures and unnecessary things, because it makes the submission just, I mean, it makes the presentation just not look that, because it's heavy and sometimes you just can't. But by and large, Chairperson, I know the team submitted the thing on Friday, and I want to really apologize for that. So the submission date was Thursday. Yeah? I want to really apologize. This one we had to do, I had to then make the changes and then sent it in yesterday. In terms of the nuclear power station, Quebec, the Department of Environmental Affairs are the ones that can fully respond to this, but there are measures in place to make sure the cooling off system of this generators is dealt with in a manner that's consistent with our international obligation in management of this. In terms of mining, yes, in fact, we do not have mining as yet. We are beginning to have exploration. We only one yet here in Mossel Bay by Total. So that's the only well now that's being drilled. Not for time. So what is happening on that platform, it is managed in terms of all international obligation. So the discharge of water, management of what comes out, either the the rocks that come out, the dust and sand or whatever. It's managed in terms of international convention, but I'll also ask the guys to respond to that. The issue of pirates is something that indeed we do along. We do as transport, I'm sure you'd appreciate. It's not our policy. We do not perform any policy function. But of course, we're working with the police because we provide the police the intelligence, and not necessarily the police sorry, the Navy and the defense, the intelligence. We do work under a structure called the MRCC, where we then coordinate our activities and function, because it is important that we do that in the discharge of trying to protect first the territorial integrity of the Republic, as well as make sure that the exploitation of the marine and our exclusive maritime zone is to the benefit of the Republic. A structure to monitor compliance, MRCC becomes that structure in the context of piracy compliance. I'll ask Pakistan and SIPO to add and respond to other questions. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Maybe to bring in a perspective again here, I've decided that I'll just give a brief note about the IMO and its responsibilities and where the Department of Transport comes in and the interface between the Department of Transport and environmental affairs. IMO is that UN agency that is responsible for making sure that the playing field is leveled when it comes to a vessel called a ship and what happens at sea as far as this particular vessel is concerned. IMO regulates marine environmental protection from any form of pollution that comes from the sea, regulates security on anything that has got to do with the ship, regulates safety of the ship. That is what it does internationally. And maritime transport being as highly regulated as it is, because it's an international phenomenon, is the fact that it takes place in the sea, which is an international space. Therefore, where the Department of Transport comes in is also in relation to any form of pollution, marine pollution that comes from the sea, from the vessel, from the ship, in all its forms. Anything that moves like a ship, a boat, is where the Department of Transport comes in. Other forms of pollution that takes place at sea are a responsibility of the Department of Environmental Affairs. So much so that I'm just trying to bring in this perspective so that our understanding should just be confined around the vessel that we are saying. There are many other sectors, there are many activities that happen at sea, but transport comes in when it comes to that thing that moves and all forms of pollution that it carries and brings, and therefore we regulate and we inspect and we make sure that the safety of this vessel called sea, of this vessel ship, is there, is at a certain standard, how it is built, how it is shaped, how it disposes of its sewerage, what happens in case of the pollution leakage, or in case of if it is carrying oil as a cargo, what happens in such incidences, what happens in that space that belongs to the international arena. And therefore, what happens to the ballast water, which we will be bringing very, very soon, which is the water that is used to balance the ship. Those are the areas that transport is responsible for. I have decided that my colleague here from SAMHSA will talk about what happens in cases of non-compliance by the operators, where the operators are not complying to the requirements, what recourse do we have, what is the process, how do they identify that, what kind of measures we have in place. We have indicated that we already have Marine Pollution Prevention Act that was in response to the MARPOL, all these other annexes of MARPOL except the two that we are talking about, which we have also indicated that after acceding to a convention, the next step will be to develop the legislation that will enable us to implement the content of this. And therefore, having my legal, my learned friend on my right hand, I will hand over to him. Thank you.
Go ahead, learned friend.
thank you, Chairperson. To put more clarity on this issue of mandates between transport and environmental affairs, basically, when you talk about the ship, we talk about two responsibilities. One is one is prevention, and another one is combating. Department of Transport is responsible for the prevention part, and the combating part falls within environmental affairs. What I mean by that, all ship-sourced pollution materials, once they are on board a ship, then it's transport. So we prevent those pollutants from leaving the ship to the water. But once they are in the water, it is the environmental Department of Environmental Affairs that is responsible for combating of the pollutants. It somehow overlaps because we're playing in the same space. But then every floating platform, which is called a vessel, including a ship, and the oil rig, because the oil rig is not a ship, but it's a vessel. So anything that is on board is on the ship. It is the responsibility of transport and SAMHSA to ensure that that oil, that sewage, does not leave the ship. If it leaves the ship, it must leave the ship in the legally compliant manner. But if it leaves the ship by accident or by intention to dump, once those pollutants are in the water, then it is the environmental affairs that is responsible, for example, for a cleanup. Because we've got marine pollution prevention of pollution from ships, that is the competence of the Department of Transport. But then if the pollutants are in the water, then we've got National Environment Management Act that kicks in. Yes. There is another regime that is in place here in trying to ensure that our waters are safe and the ships that call our ports. There is another international regime coming from the United Nations to ensure that our ships are safe, our waters are clean, and also our ports, they respond to the traffic that we're having. We've got flag state implementation, which requires all ships that are flying South African flag to be compliant with all the conventions that we ratified or we acceded to. And we've got the port state responsibility, which says all ships coming to our ports must be seaworthy. So no ship will come or no ship will leave our territorial waters if it is not seaworthy. Seaworthiness can be interpreted in many different aspects. As long as the ship does not comply with international and national legislation, that ship is considered not to be seaworthy. So we also have a coastal state responsibility to ensure that our coast is protected. So we've got the Center for Sea Watch and Response, which is our eyes and ears on the water, to ensure that all the traffic that passes by, we can see it, we can listen to people. If they want assistance, then we can respond to it.
Hold on,
there was another question saying what is in place to protect our seas. I think I've just touched on that issue, that we've got the legislation, but it only covers Annex 1, 2, 3, and 5, because we are only state parties to those annexes. So if South Africa adopts Annex 4 and 6, then it will need us to review and amend the current legislation to include those annexes that we, Annex 4 and Annex 6. I think the linkage between DOT and Transnet, I think you will address such. Yes, and the stats issue, and there's the Quebec, I think it talks to me because the issues are, those are land-based pollutants that are introduced to the sea. It's not ship-sourced pollution. So it's environmental affairs that is responsible for that capability. And there was another one about crude oil. I think it was referring to oil rigs at sea. As I was stating that this legislation applies to vessels, which includes a ship and also any floating platform, including a rig. So if a rig causes pollutants or it's got a potential to cause pollution, it has to comply with the marine pollution prevention of pollution from ships, because it is considered as a vessel. On the issue of piracy, as we know that piracy happens at high sea, which is no man's land. There's no one who's got a jurisdiction at high sea. But the IMO came up with a code which is called the Djibouti Code of Conduct, of which South Africa is a state party to that code. So it talks about fighting acts of piracy and that's another element which talks to illegal activities at sea. So that code covers those areas. I think if we've seen
there's one issue. How many? Because the stats was.
It looks like he's not done yet. But you never spoke to statistics.
That's what I was
going to. On stats of.
How many ships over the country?
As I was saying, that we've got coastal state responsibility, so we've got real-time surveillance of all the ships that are passing our waters. So our MRCC office, they can pull out the numbers and tell you the real time of how many ships do we have currently on our coastal waters. So I don't have the number exactly. But if there's any contravention by any ship, then SAMS has got the capability to detain a vessel up until they rectify all the deficiencies and you can leave the board. Thank you.
Did you?
No.
Honorable members, second part, second please.
Just a follow up.
A follow up, honorable member.
You see, DG, that's why I was appealing earlier on that it's better to send us document in advance so that we can assist you as well. Okay, nothing wrong with the responses, but I wanted to correct something. If you go to one of your pages over you, Mapol 2378, bulletin, last second bulletin from the last regulation for the control of pollution by garbage from ship. In that response of the preventing, the difference between prevention and combating, because most of the things you were referring them to the environment affairs, but here garbage also, I mean, it falls on you. You see, it's one of the most it falls on you. Therefore, I'm not satisfied with that response which you are giving, because here, I'll put an example. Some time ago, it was alleged that there was a ship which was spotted around here. They wanted to come and dump some of the remains of the nuclear. And these Greenpeace people identified, spotted there was a lot of noise. I'm making an example. Then also, here in South Africa, we never have this thing of foot and mouth disease, but its origins, there is an allegation that it's from the garbage which was dumped somewhere, and then we were experiencing problems. I was just highlighting that we, with our ancestors must, you know, I know that there are things which overlap to, but here, it proves that I was correct when I was asking some of these questions, because the garbage, that's something else from the ship. I was just highlighting that my comment.
Thank you.
All right. I thought maybe they want to clear the fallout first before the next batch.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think there were the two vessels. That was, I think, 2012, if I'm not mistaken. That the first one wanted to pass in our territorial waters. The second wanted to dock in Cape Town. The actions that we did, one is that on the one that wanted to pass, we had to provide first protection from Greenpeace, but secondly make sure that it doesn't discharge. And SAMHSA and ourselves, SAMHSA Navy, and the, who else, DIA, and who else was involved. There was a number of, so that you make sure that it doesn't discharge nuclear as it moves, because the fear that may discharge the garbage. The second one that docked, I think the one was the American warship. People were worried that it, because it's powered by nuclear, there was that possibility that it may discharge and may create. Those are the only two that come to mind. I don't know if they are in. So there are measures that we put in place to be on the alert. As CIPO indicated, our role as the Department of Transport is to make sure that that is in the ship does not come out. If it does indeed come out, it must come out in a manner that is estimated by law. If I may make an example, let's take a municipal waste treatment plant. Waste comes in, gets treated, the silt gets released either onto the rivers or onto the street, but it does not pollute. If therefore the plant takes waste, discharges at the same time, then there's pollution, then there's a problem. And that's where then the combating role that the environment plays in, say, how do then begin clean? Because once you release silt, it's therefore it's been treated, it's been
calculation based on that, so that it doesn't pollute and kill, and takes away the oxygen for the living organisms in that stream. So there's those differences, but those are the two ships I can think about. But the team can.
I don't need to say much except maybe to ask my colleague here to also bring it in maybe the perspective of saying a cargo on the ship, SAMHSA as maybe bringing it down to the normal traffic that we know, the road traffic. SAMHSA being our traffic officers at sea, people who carry out the surveys, people who issue certificates of compliance and the likes, how they know what is in the ship and how they regulate that. DG has already covered issues about the few incidences that we have had and how they were contained. And maybe SAMHSA could even have some that were discovered by the systems that we have in place. Maybe DGs, maybe later sometime, could even consider a trip to the center for the honorable members one day.
When?
DG and the chair, I'm leaving that one, is beyond me. Thank you, I can hand over to my colleague.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, if you can see on the screen on Annex 1 up until Annex 6, we are seeing all these obligations are transport obligations. We're not distancing ourselves from, for example, Annex 5, which talks to garbage. It's all within the competence of the Department of Transport. But what is our obligation as far as the IMO is concerned is to put in place mechanisms to ensure that all these substances, they don't leave the ship. And to ensure that the ship has got a certificate with regard to Annex 1, 2, 3, up until 6. So having those mechanisms in place is a prevention mechanism to ensure that there's no dumping. If there is a dumping, it is in a responsible manner that is allowed by the convention. But then, if it is dumped illegally, then that ship has committed an offence. So we detain that ship because it has contravened the convention. But then who is responsible for the cleaning up? It is not the competence of the department to come and clean up oil, for example, because we don't have facilities, the facilities are sitting with another department. But that doesn't mean we're distancing ourselves from the activities, illegal activities emanating from the ship. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Lauzi, I'm going to request the legal guru from the parliament once the questions have been asked so that can be able to give the perspective on behalf of the legislator.
Thanks, Chairman, and thanks to the DG. Today I had the DG. Last time we were seeing acting DG. Maybe.
We're still in Hollywood.
Congratulations. Yeah. They are wishing you to be a DG. And we like the department to go out for Hollywood chapters. So we'll ask so many questions here. Yeah, the honourable member very much, because you said in the recommendation that the PC must recommend the submission of MAPOL. Also the concern about the document which you said you apologize, more especially for numbering, because we would just talk without showing you which number was number. Okay, let me start by asking the clarity on the discharge of the sewerage from the ship. And there's no page, you will just check them. The last sentence is talking about this thing can reduce oxygen level, which can pose a serious health risk to people. So my concern when you said you don't have capacity, as the question from the previous latter honorable member, when this thing can pose to a very serious health risk, I think you must put it as a priority to try to remedy the situation. And in the presentation I had about the this thing involved also the vessels and the boats. So what are you doing to monitor even the dams and the rivers about this pollution on our rivers? Because I think it's also essential. So let's go to where you said the current legislation framework. You said the international, there are currently no enforceable international standards. So, but it was little declared by some there that they can maybe try to legislate this. But like we wanted to hear the stats of how many ships or vessels of whatever on our sea, which was enforced by you, by what, as you said, that the transport deal with the thing in the ship. Then what, once it's out, is the environment, as you said. So wanted to know how many did you prevent not to dispose such. The other, I will go to another slide of consultation. I think in the consultation you should have maybe also consulted the municipality along the coast and the provinces, KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape and Western Cape, in order to assist you on that area. You said we don't have capacity because it's one of the organs of the state to assist us. And the consultation with the SANDAF and the, our law enforcement agencies, I can't see them here in your consultation of this, what you want us to approve. The financial implication, you said no, about the current technology, it will only need if there will be an improvement. But I wanted to know whether you budgeted for that in the department, for the improvement of the technology, you said. The last thing I wanted to ask is something not in the presentation. Last time, I don't know which month, I think it's last year, December, January, where there was a ship somewhere stuck in the water, people that don't have food, people are given food by the Good Samaritans. I don't know what happened, what was that, and what the department did to interfere on that. Thanks, Chairperson. That's my clarity seeking questions.
Okay, thank you very much, colleague.
Maybe as we will be going forward, we will request the department through the secretary of the committee that we get information a year to date of monitoring the impact in terms of the work that has been done, because I can hear members here over and over again. They're coming to one question. Do we have statistics in terms of the work that has been done of monitoring the pollutants and the polluters, if we can get that kind of information just broadly so that we can be able to assist the members as they will be dealing with the work. Moreover, we will be going into an exercise of legislating on these two current ones, 5, Mapol, 4 and 6, so that at least they appoint themselves. This is to me as a new subject matter, which is, that's why we keep on asking. You can think that the questions are very of inferior quality, but it's a new subject matter. At some stages, as Honorable Khadali was talking, I felt that maybe if we could be talking, you take the marine and put it as in road issues, because those are the easy things that we're able to understand. But I didn't want to say but just understandably, so if you are in a car and then you go out and pee, what are the implications? We understand that the traffic officers will give you a fine. These are the little things, but they go a long way in terms of understanding the whole aspect of what we're talking about in terms of the marine related issues. So that is why I'm saying any other information that will be able to assist us will really go a long way. I had three. Once you have responded, you will come in, ma'am.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Let me start with the last question first. I think what would help, Honorable Chair, is indeed a suggestion by Honorable Khatem that we really provide the opportunity for a visit to the site. And I don't know, would need to take, we'll manage that with the secretariat today, and then we'll then agree on the date and time and then take you through the center. Because in the center you will see the monitoring capability. As I said earlier on, we do have the monitoring capability. There's no question. As we see every ship that passes, we see every ship that discharges in our territorial waters. And hence, the response I see for them. Sometimes the ability to detain. But you'd understand if you have at least about 13,000 ships passing our territorial waters a day, it's a massive ask. But nonetheless, we will give you the statistics, we'll give you everything. And of course, you also can see. Can I suggest, in response to that question, and the manner you put it, the year to date figures, we then first do the thing and then. And then the rest will then follow. I would ask Usipo to come in on the ship that was stuck in the water. The only thing we do, if there's a, as Usipo said, if there is a ship that requires our assistance, we'll provide that assistance. But if there's a ship that has the potential to pollute our waters in an effort to prevent, I'm sure that was the case, but I'm not sure about the exact case. But if there's a shipwreck, we become responsible, we'll pull it out, make sure that all that needs to be done is done. If you have people who are stuck and then we're given food, I'll ask Sipo to do that. Of course, in terms of finance, that's under SAMHSA. SAMHSA has the budget, because there's a function that is for industry. We get those levies and levy industry for those services. So I guess the financial implication is such that would there be a state treasury financial implication? And the answer is no. But would there be financial implications in the discharge, execution, possibly recovery? Yes. And that has been taken, that has been catered for under the levies, and again, SIPO would leave. And then the consultation of municipalities, SANDF and the local, that's a constant. We have a coordinating structure between DOT, the Navy, and all the other law enforcement agencies that always engages. Because, as I said earlier on, we do not perform the policing functions. We perform the other functions. And therefore, it becomes important that we coordinate. So there is constant communication, constant management. Municipalities, of course, as Sipo said, once Transnet provides for those infrastructure, municipalities are the ones that have the ability to deal with waste, clean it up in so many ways, and then release this. So municipalities get involved, because Transnet does not have in-house capacity to deal with that. It provides infrastructure. Municipalities then do the, there's that constant interaction. So standard and law enforcement is where we really deal. The discharge also you correct, because that's the reason why we've got to protect or prevent, as it were, from our side, the discharge of sewer, because that's what it does. So dealing with issues around oxygen, as we say here, read this thing correctly so that it reduces oxygen levels. That's what sewer does in water, because so that to avoid the living organisms in that at sea or wherever the discharge may happen, is to protect the marine environment. And that's why we are saying, help us accede to this so that we can discharge our functions as a department. Let me ask you, Sipho, then, to give meet in the other areas that I've not done. Sipho.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Jefferson. On the ship that, you know, those people who were given food parcels, I'm not sure which particular ship, but in general, you find sometimes a ship that runs aground because of accident or incident. And in some cases, you find ship owners abandon the ship. They leave it like that, then they disappear. And they leave the seafarers stranded. But then there is a provision in terms of the Merchant Shipping Act which provides for repatriation of those seafarers. So I'm not sure how it panned out. Maybe those seafarers were repatriated. But firstly, it is the responsibility of the ship owner to repatriate the seafarers. But should the ship owner not being able to be traced because maybe the incident was due to the fault of the captain, then it becomes the responsibility of the flag, of which it is the country where the ship is registered. But should you not get joy from the flag state, then it becomes the country's responsibility to repatriate those seafarers and may claim the repatriation cost from the ship owner, if it fails, then from the flag state. Another issue of it was monitoring of dams and rivers. In 2007, the Minister of Transport then extended the transport mandate to inland waterways, which include dams, rivers, estuaries. But that mandate, it only talks about the seaworthiness of the boat and the competency of the skipper, I mean the driver of the boat. It says a boat to be in the water, it must have the certificate of fitness. It must be fit to be in the water, and the driver must be competent. So we issue a certificate of competency for the driver to be able to drive a seaworthy boat. So that competence falls within the jurisdiction of the Department of Transport. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ramachakana, you wanted to advise before I
Chair, thank you very much. Yes, if I may, and apology for lateness. My body refuses to carry me these days. I don't know what's happening. Chair, the arising from the explanation, I know the DG talked about 13,000 ship per day passing our waters. But I wanted to ask the question, in the event, like the previous member asked the question about, I mean, if in Cape Town, if you drive towards Blowback, you'll see a ship that is now rotting there somewhere, that was, I think it hit a reef or something some time back. But the question I want to ask in relation to that, in terms of the department assisting, when you say if they want assistance, we'll assist in terms of authority. Is what is the responsibility of the ship owner insofar as the cost of labor is concerned towards the ship in terms of us taking responsibility in the country, the recovery? The one story about the ship that I think it was a Malaysian ship, which it was said it was not roadworthy, it was not a proper ship to be able to sail. That's why the owner ran away or somehow or something like that. So the ship as a result is rotting there because it could not come anywhere to light so that he can be charged or he can be asked to pay. So I just want to find, in terms of the registration, what is the cost recovery in terms of the owners of the ship in the context of us putting a labor to offer assistance? The second one was really just also a follow-up. Is a degree of compliance. The acting DG speaks about they are able to see every ship, whatever happens on the sea, if dumping happens in terms of monitoring, they'll be able to pick that up. I just want to find out, I know that the chair talked about statistics, the degree of the compliance or non-compliance in terms of your monitoring. Maybe it's a statistical question that we may get later in so when you are giving the report, maybe the annual report as well. And also the last one, which is really a small question, is in relation to the capacity to detain. You spoke about detaining and so on. So I was wondering if you take a step back, maybe it's also a statistical question, you may want to help us just to get a sense of this aspect of detention. Historically, in fact, in terms of you implementing the work, this is you have been able to detain X, Y, Z, and that this is a process that's been followed. So those are the three questions. I know I wanted to ask the water traffic, given the problem with other waters, but I think the acting DG already indicated that there is a volume of traffic. So I'm going to leave that question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Quickly, let's respond to this question and then move on.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me start with the second one first, the degree of compliance and non-compliance. As Sipo indicated earlier, it is the responsibility of the flag state to make sure that vessels that are registered in the state really are compliant with all international standards. Like in any other sector, there are those that then cut corners. But again, as the Honorable Ramatlakane is asking, what I will do is, because if it's non-compliant, as Sipo said earlier on, we will detain it because it must be seaworthy. If it doesn't comply in terms of it being seaworthy, it will be detained. But if it doesn't comply in terms of discharge of pollutants into the water, we will identify it, we will then detain. When we detain a ship, it gets docked in one of the ports. It therefore becomes the responsibility of the ship owner to pay the docking costs and for use of that berth. So for as long as it's there, the berth will, the owner would have to pay the berthing cost. The issue is centered around historically how many we've detained. I'm not sure, but I think there is that, because the last one I know was the Russian vessel that was detained of its not seaworthiness and wasn't let to until they sorted themselves out. So that's the last ship that was detained that I know of. It may be that on an ongoing basis, and SIPO from SAMHSA will then give us a sense. Cost recovery, there are international conventions that provide for cost recovery. either in instances of serious pollution, wreck removal. In fact, one of the conventions that we are going to be bringing in again this year is on the Nairobi Convention on wreck removal. So we will be coming back to deal with the issues if there is a wreck or an accident or an incident and the ship runs aground. What then is it that we do and how therefore do we recover that? But cost recovery is embedded in the international conventions, and we, I think it was 2011 when we acceded to it and domesticated that into South African law, because ourselves, the National Treasure, had to deal whether is this a money bill or whatever. But it ultimately, we ultimately acted, it was not a money bill, it was a means through which we can get monies for executing certain tasks under the IMO obligations. Simple, if you can add on.
Thank you, Chair. Coming back again to saying we are responsible for three areas, mainly environmental protection, safety, and the third one being security. DG has already indicated that there is going to be another convention that will be presented to this committee, because it has already gone through cabinet, this one of the direct removal. There is yet another bill that originates from the convention that has been signed by the Department of Labor, that is the Maritime Labor Convention, where we say as transport in cases of this abandonment, what happens to the crew? And again, what are the conditions, working conditions, labor conditions of the employees and people who are working on the ship? Because they also have to meet the standard, to be of a certain standard. And the working conditions, that one is also still coming. SIPO, okay, the early this year, a law was signed. South Africa managed to take out a bill, which is now an act of parliament, that deals with the International Oil Pollution Convention, including an international fund in cases of the oil pollution. What happens? How do we, what is the recourse? And this one I would like SIPO also to try and expand on the convention, because at least it will give us that comfort to know that the ship owners are forced to have financial cover of some sort in case of incident, any form of pollution incidents. Thank you, SIPO. I think you'll be able to
handle this.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of the ship that is in one of our beach in Cape Town, and of course recovery methodology thereof, we have a national legislation which is called Wreck and Salvage Act. That piece of legislation, it has a provision which stipulates that it is the ship owner's responsibility to remove a ship that is stranded or a wreck. But in most cases you find ships that are registered under the flag of convenience. Basically, it is almost impossible to track who the ship owner is. And it might be more trying to track the ship owner than to remove a wreck. So if you fail to trace the real ship owner, then it becomes a state responsibility to remove that wreck. But we've got so many wrecks in our waters. Other wrecks are just left in those waters, but as long as it doesn't pose any navigational hazards to ships and also doesn't have an environmental impact on our ecosystem, they might be allowed. But then there was a convention that was adopted by the IMO in 2007, which is the Reg Removal Convention. I hope South Africa will be adopting that particular convention. So it imposes an obligation on a ship owner to have a compulsory insurance on board. In case then there's a wreck, then that insurance kicks in to ensure that all the activities that requires a wreck to be removed is covered under P&I insurance.
Mike, please.
Speak to the
Maybe if we can be able to simplify it for honorable members, you know. We are not all lawyers. When you speak about these things, you must, you know, really put, tone it down. Some of the ages have gone by.
That convention seeks to give the country, the port state, comfort, saying, if there is a wreck, if a ship runs aground and becomes a wreck, then there is an insurance that kicks in, saying we're going to cover all the expenses emanating from that wreck. So that would be in terms of the Nairobi Convention on Wreck Removal. But South Africa is not yet a state party to the convention. But then there are indications that we want to ratify the particular convention to ensure that all the wrecks that are on that poses hazards to navigation, to navigational routes, are removed. On the reports regarding compliance or non-compliance, basically non-compliance, we've got an obligation because we are a member to the regional organizational structure, which is divided into the East and the West Coast. On the East Coast, we are a member of the Indian Ocean Port State Control to ensure that all the vessels that are navigating on the east side of the continent ensure that they comply with international obligations. So every ship that plies on those waters, and if it calls Mozambique passes a report to South Africa and say, there's a ship coming, please check A, B, C, and D. And on the West Coast as well, we've got the Abuja MOU on Port State Control. So all the ships that are plying on the West Coast of our continent, so we've got that kind of repository and saying, there's this ship and it might pose dangers to your waters. So be careful of that ship. So if there is any contravention, then we report it to the Abuja MOU, we report it to an Indian Ocean MOU, as well as to the IMO. So there is a report that can be provided to the committee. I think those are the two matters that we're studying.
Yeah, the temporary power is very nice. I'm enjoying power. I think all our members, are you finding the questions? So there's one left. As we are giving to the chair to sum it up and close it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I had requested the lawyer from Parliament to just make a brief observation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And greetings to everyone in the House. Chairperson and the honourable members, having had a thorough background and the presentation into the outstanding two annexed charges of MARPOL, I believe moving forward, as I said, that the presentation was thorough and it attempted to actually provide the background as to where exactly this treaty or convention comes from and the four annexed charges that have already been approved by both houses and have been given effect. The process that now the committee is actually needing to engage on, having considered what has been said and the information that they currently have now, is to deal with the recommendations as suggested, that the committee would need to then, having made a decision, to make a recommendation to the House whether they recommend that this outstanding two treaties be given approval, which will then in the process will provide the binding effect into this international agreement. And I think that is the stage where the committee needs to look into, because as it is tabled as a 2312 instrument, it does require approval other than just for purposes of tabling for information purposes. So I think, Chairperson, with all that has transpired before the committee now, the committee just needs to make a decision moving forward whether they approve the two instruments that are before the committee, and that would be the finalization. And as I said, the information was thorough, and it also looks into the existing legislative framework, and it has been explained before the members, and I think, I believe that all the information was in order. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Here we are. The presentation has been made. We are expected to approve and recommend to Parliament the two treaties 4 and 6 that Parliament assent to the two treaties, and looking forward to having legislation being brought to the committee once more. Honorable Greco.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. Is it working?
Yes.
Chairperson, as I was listening to the presentation, I welcome the presentation by the department and also thank the department for bringing to our attention the damage that's being done in our oceans. I did not know, Honorable Chairperson, that in a day there is this much damage in our oceans. Nonetheless, Chair, we've read the documents. They were self-explanatory. Questions were asked by the members. Answers were provided. But, Chair, there are cases where the answers, the questions that are asked by members are not answered to the satisfaction of the member. I therefore ask the department, through you, Chairperson and Secretary, to provide further explanations to those questions. I also welcome the input by the DG of talking about that Operation Pakisa. We would like, as members, to know more about that program of Operation Pakisa. We would welcome, Chair, if you can invite them in one of our sessions for them to take us through that program. Nonetheless, Chair, given the summary by yourself and the lawyer from Parliament, I therefore recommend that the committee notes, approves, and recommends these two annexures, Annexure 4 and Annexure 6, that we agree to them, we approve them, and recommend tabling for processing to Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable. Is there a seconder?
Thank you, Honourable. Chair.
Yes.
I second the motion.
Is there a counter? Is there an descending or ascending voice?
I'm adding to second.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable. Therefore, let me just quickly read to yourself what we will be taking to Parliament as a report on the International Convention for the Prevention of Marine Pollution from ships 73/78 this is the work that we are doing today. The Portfolio Committee on Transport, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of Annexure 4 and Annexure 6, and the explanatory memorandum to Annexure 4 and Annexure 6 of the International Convention for the Prevention of Marine Pollution from Ships, MARPOL 73/78, referred to it, recommends to the House that in terms of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution, that the House approve the said convention. This is what we will be submitting because we are agreeing, Honorable Members. Thank you very much. Without much ado, let me thank the Department and in particular say to the Acting Director General and the Chief Director that I've seen power at play today, because the acting DG will transfer to the Chief Director. The Chief Director will take it to CIPO, and CIPO has done a lot of work, and I hope that they are going to increase your salary for having really done the work on their behalf. But we really appreciated what you did here today. Both the Chief Director, CIPO, and the Acting Director General.
In fact, the captain has been quite a lot of work
Muluku and Mpo, I apologize for having heckled you when you were on arrival. when I'm easy, I will take you out for tea just to show that I really appreciate the work that you did here today. Ladies, we really appreciate, we'll be looking forward, as indicated earlier on, that we definitely will be looking forward for the law. The bill that will be coming before us so that we can be able to protect our seas, but also economically speaking, this is another angle within which we can be able to add value, create jobs, and make sure that we become contributory factors towards the economy of the Republic, because there will be other spin-offs that will be coming out of these two legislation besides protecting our ports and our seas as such. Thank you very much from both the department and from on behalf of the team transport. We're looking forward to interacting with you very soon so that we can be able to visit the center and acquaint ourselves better with the subject matter. Thank you very much. You're released.
Thank you, Chair.
Members of the committee, just a quick few minutes so that we can be able to do house work. Thank you.
Hold on a minute.